Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com. Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Christmas. Merry Christmas. In the opening to the show there, you were getting just a little sample of some of the exciting new Christmas music coming out of these socially aware college campuses all over America. I hope you enjoy these songs. And on this very special day, a gift for you of sorts. So let me tell you a little bit about what I'm doing here. There's a new year upon us. In that new year, 2016, if you don't have a calendar in front of you, there's going to be many exciting changes coming for the School Sucks Project. And one of those changes is a lot more material added to our bonus content section, which I call the AV Club. In fact, probably about half of what we produce in 2016 will wind up being bonus material. Now, don't worry, we're going to produce more in this coming year, so there'll still be plenty of free but valuable podcast entries. But there is a cost for the storage of audio files online and the bandwidth needed to download them. So I need to start clearing some of the older stuff out. And as I've said before, I always get a little bit discouraged when I see some of these entries that I thought were really entertaining and even educational. There's plenty of educational stuff in the bonus content section as well. Have 12 listens or 15 or even 25 listens. That's not enough. So I made myself a little list of some of the items that I thought were undiscovered or underappreciated, and I'm going to let them go today for free. This also provides me an opportunity to express my gratitude to you, the listener, for your participation and your engagement in the School Sucks Project. I am really, really grateful that you still listen to the show. There are a lot of podcasts out there. Now, granted, many of them suck, but there are a lot of people competing for your precious time and attention. And this is the best method that I have of sending a nice little gift to thousands and thousands of people. So don't try to listen to all this stuff today. You know, spend time with your family, your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, or your husband, or your wife, and your kids, and your grandma. Oh gosh, your grandma. You know, don't let grandma wind up in the corner while you argue with your uncle and your dad about Donald Trump. Bring her into the fold. She's got stories. She lived through Operation Desert Storm. But yeah, that's it for now. There's more news coming on the changes we're going to be making in 2016. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas or whatever, and a happy new year. And you know what? I'm proud of this collection of additional content that we produced. If you're already a subscriber, if you're already making a monthly contribution and you're a member of the AV Club, I hope there's some exciting discoveries in these next 9 installments. And of course, if you're a regular listener and you're still listening, which means you find this show entertaining and valuable, I hope you'll consider supporting us. You go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV and you can sign up there. Thank you in advance. Up next, this is a little planning session that Gardner, Osborne, and I recorded back in July of this year. And in this discussion, even though it wanders off in several different directions, we discuss the future of Podcastmasters and what we're going to be doing in 2016 relative to the presidential election. Right, so this is probably a good baseline. This is my voice. That actually is fine as long as it doesn't peak. Gardner, let me hear you.
All right, this is my voice as long as they don't peak, popping P's.
That looks good.
S's.
Osborne?
Osborne over here.
All right.
This is me talking into the mic.
How am I,
Smurf
how
mic
I
over here.
Towards Osborne.
Yeah, that's like that still looks okay. Good. Yeah, okay, cool. You have good mic technique. It's July 4th. I always record on July 4th.
Yeah, it is that special time of year where we celebrate the ancient Chinese art of making colors in the sky that go boom.
Mm-hmm.
And can be regulated now. My brother does some fireworks, and they've been doing them for almost 10 years. This is the 10th anniversary up at this little cottage he has. And this year they got a visit from the state for their Independence Day fireworks because, of course, you can't have, you know, fireworks to celebrate freedom without the state giving you permission.
So a preemptive visit?
Yes, preemptive visit. No one has ever been harmed. No tortious claims against them for any reason.
You filed for a permit? Or
had to do all that stuff, and they've been visited before, and so they had to make sure they did their permits, and this time they could not do the fireworks that they had wanted to do. So I noticed it was a little bit less impact, and he said, "Yeah, they told us there were certain ones that we could not do." So because you know they're on a lake, so God forbid that a fire start.
Where was this again?
Those water fires. You got to look out for
terrible
them.
Water fires. It was in Rumney.
Well, if they frack there.
Yeah, you never know. That's right. That's get true. The gases.
With fracking, you get those water fires.
Yeah, so it was in Rumney. It was great, though. They do a great job every year.
A famous Cleveland, wasn't there some river that caught on fire years ago?
Yeah, that was true. That did happen once. But then there was lots of fracking stories that people could turn on their faucet and set their water on fire.
I heard that.
Yeah.
I've heard it's kind of bogus.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that as well.
So today is also Get Away from Amherst Day in my hometown. Yeah. Yes, even though I know you know people.
That's why I was very pleased we decided to do this because my wife took the kids out to Amherst for the big parade today.
Yeah.
And this gave me a way out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Somebody asked me at the little convenience store downtown, like, oh, you're going to come over for 4th of July? I'm like, dude, there is nothing that I would want to stay away from more than downtown Amherst. Every political candidate is there today.
They're all there. Oh, yeah. So, and every single one of them invited me to walk with them in the parade.
Well, I was at the fireworks here last night, and there was a good turnout of Free Staters handing out like little pamphlets about independence, like what it actually is. And I was telling you guys I hung out with Kokesh for a while. They were doing some interviews of people just asking them like trivia questions and then asking them about freedom. And I was just observing, and some of the answers were really interesting.
Really?
Like the questions kind of led to people being like, yeah, I guess we're not really that free. I guess there's a lot we should change. It was interesting.
It's a good opportunity to be able to get the word out to people and have conversations. I shouldn't poo-poo it. It is a good day to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. I kind of felt like I didn't know how I felt about it, like confronting people, because part of it is, you know, when someone is somewhere trying to have a nice time, they think they're going to see those things explode in the sky. Maybe there's a hot dog vendor. I did see a kid puking up what looked like cotton candy, so that was sad. But other than that, you know, being confronted about like, hey, here's some serious shit.
Yeah.
You know, when you're trying to have a good time. I don't know. Like I've seen video of people like really getting mad at Bill Domenico.
Yeah.
You know, he's got this laser. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this.
Oh, yeah.
But he, like, from across the river, like, during fireworks, he, like, projects messages onto a building. Like, about the NSA and stuff on
That's
the 4th
awesome.
Of July.
It's great.
So, eventually, people find him. They mm-hmm. figure, they say, that's not part of the building. It must be coming from somewhere else. And they track him down, and they confront him, and they're like, it's not appropriate today. You know, like this is the day that it's not appropriate. So it's interesting that, I mean, if you went up to people any of the other 364 days of the year, they'd probably be like, yeah, you know, today's just not the best day for me. But this right. is especially inappropriate.
Yeah.
So people have that mindset. And it's hard. We talked about this a lot last night, too, like converts. And that one of the important measures of activism should be like, how many people are you actually converting? It shouldn't be about YouTube views, right?
Right.
Because... you know, I mean, nothing against Cantwell.
Sure.
But he gets a lot of traffic, but is he converting people? And then the same conversation that I've had with people out in Keene, what is the quality of your converts?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, if you are getting converts, so these are the people we brought. This is the, I hate to talk about people in terms of quality, but it's kind of unavoidable sometimes.
You're right.
And, you know, I've been really wanting to get out to like the Portsmouth area more. It seems like they have a really good community developing out there. You know, I mean, The state is, like, as you go from west to east, it seems to become
less intense,
increasingly quality.
I changed my approach.
You disagree?
I don't. Well, my observation is when you go from west to east, it becomes increasingly left wing.
As you go from west to east, so from Keene to Portsmouth, you really?
Well, when would you consider that to be more accepting of the state or right. left wing? Yeah, anti-establishment.
All those. No. Like the MSNBC.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Left. Right. Interesting.
Oh, I'm just talking about, like, in terms of the Free State. Like, where the Free State stations are across the state. Keene, Manchester, Concord.
I got you.
Portsmouth.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough nut to crack out on the seacoast because of the general population. They are very hardcore left-wing. Concord, Portsmouth, from Concord over to Portsmouth, those are the bastions of leftism.
Yeah. But you have the same problem in Keene.
Keene's real left-wing.
So the more quality Free Staters go to the more hardcore bastions of of liberalism.
Or maybe they turn it up harder.
I wonder why that is.
Except Keene.
Or what the definition of quality is. That.
Well, I would just say, I mean, Adam and I were talking about this last night, and what I said is, you know, there are several things you can do, right? You can project success. You can project health. You can project happiness. I mean, you might not be able to project all of those things. You fucking get it made if you can. Yeah. But, you know, you say, okay, what's my strength, you know? And how can I show people that I'm living a free, fulfilled, and happy life? And, you know, for me, it's a work in progress, but there's things that I think I do well, and those are the things that I try to show people. And if you're already if outreach is important to you, I mean, maybe outreach isn't, that's not why you're here. I mean, I think there's certainly people who are just here because they want to be left alone and they want to be in a community of like-minded people, but kind of think being in the last few months, like, I've gotten out and talked to a lot more people and met people who are outside of the Free State Project. I've talked to people who identified, they called themselves socialists, but we had good conversations. Like, at least, you know, like, there's a world out there to think about, you know.
Yeah. And sometimes the points that you can make with those people will resonate. I was saying, you know, I changed my approach a number of years ago where I used to be much more confrontational. And then I realized I wasn't getting anywhere with these people. I wasn't winning. Yeah, I wasn't winning even one point to let it sink in with somebody to say, hey, think about this one. And then leave it open to say, if you think about that, think about applying it in some other areas. And I used to be just in people's faces. And then I changed it. And, you know, coming from Amherst, I was in the 4th of July parade last year. And, you know, still people, they didn't want to hear it and that sort of stuff. So you have to sort of, it's almost like jujitsu, you know, mm-hmm. you gotta use your strengths and their weaknesses, but in a much more subtle way, you know, gotta sort of work at it a little bit. And I found that to be a lot more successful, at least verbally, not going on the attack, but trying to find those areas of commonality to say, yeah, you know, I think we agree here that this is not right. So, you know, maybe it'll leave something with them.
Right. Well, I mean, the reason why it came up with Kokesh last night is Adam, he wrote this book. It's like this 100-page book that's like Freedom a Manifesto. And he says, look, this is simple enough to sell it to anybody who will read it, you know. And he also said, like, you know, the people who hear this message, if they're just open-minded, they usually accept it, you know, even if they don't admit it. You know, they get it. They're like, fuck, shit, this is the truth, you know? And I remember, I mean, it was I don't think it's like, for most people, it's like one momentous event.
Yeah.
I think it's like a gradual process. I mean, I remember it was like 2007. I was like, oh no, I'm an anarchist. Yeah, oh yeah, gosh, right. Well, this is not going to be good.
Oh yeah, you know? I remember when I was, well, just an anecdote, when I was a teenager, one of my buddies was a punk rocker, you know, he was, I'm an anarchist, and I didn't quite understand what that was. I thought it was the Sex Pistols and violence and just bringing down every agreed to system and causing chaos. And I think on a day like this, you know, bringing it back to what you were talking about, you know, the red, white, and blue 4th of July Independence Day thing, it is an opportunity to talk to people because their mind is sometimes on this, rather than, as you say, that was the same thing that was going through my mind. Every other day they say, well, no, this isn't a good time. Well, when is it a good time? Well, maybe today is a good time because it's supposedly sort of in the air that everybody's feeling patriotic about their country and stuff. But that very feeling of patriotism about their country can be a block itself. You know, they don't want to hear a lot of criticism about government itself, about the United States government. So it's a way to approach people. If you can find one little in on this day,
yeah,
then you can sort of feed other information and then sort of kick back. But you can't go after too hard. You can't hit them too hard. You got to find little subtle ways to sneak it in.
I think part of that is like being conscious, like being like living and approaching people consciously, right? So yeah. If you go up to a guy, like I'm just talking about like some of the observations that I had last night. If you go up to a guy and he's wearing like a bespeckled Uncle Sam hat and he has a shirt on that's like support the troops, maybe you should talk to him about Obama, you know?
You got to be aware of what you think their idiosyncrasies or personal feelings might be. If you can read them well.
Right. Exactly. Well, persuasion is the sales process, as far as I'm concerned. You need to establish a rapport with somebody. You need to assess their needs, right? Do they need what I have or do they not? And then you have to make a recommendation, right?
Yeah.
So if you're just, you know, I mean, most people present libertarianism like telemarketers, you know? Which is like completely skipping all of that, not even making a recommendation.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I have a job to try and sell this thing, and this is, you know, will you buy this thing?
And also the longer – well, I think this, maybe the longer you're in it for a certain period, up to a certain period, you get a pattern to your approach, as the telemarketer does.
Mm-hmm.
So you go through – I remember one time I was having a conversation with someone, and I remarked to a buddy of mine later, I was like, dude, that was like playing a chess game that I played 1,000 times before. I know – you know what they're going to say. So you've got your response planned and it becomes pat and boring. You know, it's you're not really – I wasn't really listening to find ways to address what their concerns were. I was listening for their cue points so I could answer on a policy question or some history point that was more confrontational rather than – actually hearing what they had to say and hearing their concerns and then trying to address that concern in a personal way. It became very impersonal because I had had those conversations so many times. It was like a computer program.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have a chance, speaking of all this, to make some hay with Podcast Masters over the next year.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Do you refer to election season?
Yes. By once a month dealing with – now – so I think one of the hesitations has been like the hardest thing to do in podcasting is to get three people in the same room. I've realized like I actually have another event like this at 3 p.m. today that we've been trying to coordinate for a month, like getting two. And this is just on Skype, getting three people together. So there's that challenge. But also I've kind of like set the bar high as far as like what a production needs to be. Like they have to be these mega productions now. So it's not like, hey, let's just get together and record Podcast Masters. You know, it's got to be like, you know,
have
some
agenda, have it written out, what, you know, or at least have your information. This is the information we really want to get through. This is going to make it a valuable thing for people later on. This is going to be, you know, really informative and full of chunks of awesomeness.
Right. So when you talk about a once a month production, people are like, once a month, this better be fucking spectacular, you know? So that's kind of, but now we can just deal with like, we can create kind of a chronology of how this election goes over the next year by dealing with it. Now, people in my audience, hopefully most of them don't care about politics, but they like the spectacle of these clowns and the things they say.
Yeah.
So before we started, I was talking about the Glenn Greenwald versus Larry O'Donnell video that we did a couple years ago. And there is going to be a ripe, fruitful field of videos like that, you know, coming out over the next month. So I think that that's the best way to approach this. Like if we do this once a month, we have, you know, a couple of videos that we can cover.
Yeah.
And we have time to prepare
but I don't. I haven't followed the election too closely. I actually had a conversation with Crispin Sartwell. Do you guys know who that is?
No.
He's a he teaches at Dickinson College in Pennsylvania, and he wrote a book about 8 years ago called Against the State, where he takes on like the utilitarian argument for government. He takes on the social contract theory, and he takes on what's called the decision theory, which is kind of like game theory.
Yeah,
you know. So he and I talked a little bit, and you know, he talked about how he was excited about Rand Paul and how he's excited about Bernie Sanders, and it just from not from like, oh, these are, and he did say he would vote for Rand Paul. And I said, well, why vote for him? You know, like this is the only way you can project your voice into this world. Like, why not just say no?
Yeah.
I'm not, yeah. I won't be insulted.
Yeah.
But, that he kind of thought that those people would bring this honesty to, like, Bernie Sanders will. I mean, he's not right about a lot of what he believes, but he's not running a campaign that's managed by focus groups.
No, he's not couching his statements. He's saying what his philosophy. He's expressing it pretty clearly.
Right.
You know, he always has. You know, so,
if there was a focus group, they'd be like, comb your hair.
Yeah.
make sure your tie is straight.
Right.
You know?
Plant these people with questions. Only appear at this place. And I was doing on the show, on the Liberty Conspiracy show, I was analyzing one recent statement from Hillary Clinton where she said democracy is not for multimillionaires and corporations. So, you know, it took like 0.2 seconds to look up some of her donors and, you know, find out some of the major donors of Hillary Clinton, and then go back a little bit into explaining about democracy and why that's not necessarily a good thing. And I like being able to do some of these things because it offers you the opportunity to go with the immediate answer to what they're saying or how they're obfuscating or they're going by a patent line or something like that. And then oftentimes that patent line has trigger words in it that they know they're using intentionally to hit certain people in the audience. So you can go deeper into it and go through the philosophy, how the philosophy is skewed or how they're using, you know, some technique that was used by the Nazis or something like that.
Sure.
It's,
yeah.
It's very interesting. And it's when I was a kid, I would notice a lot of the lines, but I didn't realize how they had been used by people I was being taught about in school who were, you know, the bad guys. And we were always the good guys, you know, mm-hmm. in the United States, we. And then you start to see what these people are doing and you say, oh, my gosh, man. You know, it just makes you realize how Orwell's warnings and things like Animal Farm 1984 are so universally applicable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, like, as far as material, there will be no shortage. And, like, the Hillary Clinton show, like, I started just, like, looking around for information. Yeah. Like, we'd be, like, the 50th people to do a Hillary Clinton in-depth expose, like, going back and doing Whitewater and Vince Foster and Mina. Oh, I mean, we could go further.
That was some of the first stuff I read on the internet back when internet first began.
So, yeah. Judge Report would have reports.
There was a website called Deaths Related to Clinton. just full of all kinds of information.
I'm going to see if it's still up. And if it hasn't, that'd be sweet if it hasn't been updated. Deaths related to Clinton. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that kind of after that sort of inspired me was watching Donald Trump's announcement video.
Mm. Oh, man, that guy.
Did you watch it, Osborne?
Full of comedy. I listened to parts of it on the radio.
Yeah.
As well as there was this long CNN interview where he's got some just choice quotes in there. Really? Like, who do you think is doing the raping?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was what I thought. And then I had this other idea for the title. But that's Podcast Masters, Who's Doing the Raping? But it's it's a little too controversial. Okay, well, yeah, this maybe was the site you were looking at, Osborne, because it doesn't look like it's been updated as far as the way it's built.
Wow, the Clinton body count.
Vince Foster, John F. Kennedy Jr. Oh, wow. The Clinton body count. This would be a good show.
Wow.
Fundraisers.
Holy smokes.
Well, wait a minute. Does the person who made this site know that sometimes people just die over time? let's see.
Eventually, the Clintons will be on that page themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there was this interesting thing about that these kids saw, that there were these kids who saw the airfield in MENA where these planes were supposedly landing, and they wound up dead, like on train tracks, and they were all, the medical examiner ruled them all
suicide
or natural causes or just something that's like,
they
what?
They were partying out there. Yeah. It was an Il Duce from the Mentors. He stood in front of a train.
So there would be a way to do this. Now, is it just like go after who's ahead in the polls that month, which Clinton, that will happen at some point for the – I mean, she's going to lead, obviously. I don't even know anyone who she's running against besides Sanders.
Webb just announced James Webb, former senator, is a novelist.
I don't know anything about that guy. But
He's a moderate Democrat. Yeah.
Was he the one who told George Bush that how his son was doing was none of his business?
Yeah. He's a really plain-spoken sort of guy. Yeah, he takes no
– Yeah, they're calling him the Chris Christie of the Democrats.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a story, I guess, when his son was in Iraq and George Bush said, "How's your son?" And he said,
"Yeah,
none of your business."
I think that's the guy.
Bush.
Yeah. And he's had best-selling novels. He's actually a pretty decent writer.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he's got a strange background, but yeah, he's in it now, and you know, they're saying, "Oh, that's going to cause a problem for Hillary." It's like, "No, it's the money is all lined up for Hillary."
Yeah, it seems like everything is all lined up for Hillary.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a lock. And then the other side, it's Christie. I mean, I don't even know if I can list them all. Christie.
15 of them now?
Yeah, 16, 18.
Did you hear that some of these candidates, one of the things that's floating around, I have to check up on it, but some of them evidently are getting paid. They're getting big contributions from people who are actually really good friends with the Bushes. If they want these people to go run so that they'll split the vote amongst like Christian conservatives so that the Jeb Bush will have the plurality of
it. I think that's obviously what's happening.
I have to find out. It's right now it's just speculation that I've heard, but it makes sense.
So what they're trying to do is because George Bush or Jeb Bush has like some issues that certain conservatives or like a big part of the voting block of conservatives would find controversial.
Yeah.
Like
immigration,
no
stuff.
Fence, yeah. No giant fence kind of stuff.
Right.
They want to split up all the, and I don't know if they would consider him like George Bush pulled it off as like with the evangelical crowd. But if they're like, that's not going to happen with Jeb Bush, then I get that strategy. Yeah.
That's right. There's some attempt in some states, like here in New Hampshire, of caucuses getting together ahead of time to try to agree upon a candidate who is not Jeb Bush that everyone will support.
Interesting.
Here in New Hampshire, it's called the 603 Alliance.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's going to be successful or not, but there needs to be a mechanism like that established because of the winner-take-all election system that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we had approval voting or some other kind of methodology of establishing the Condorcet winner in an election, we wouldn't need to do that. But when you got 15 guys all in the top vote getter gets all the votes.
Yeah.
You got to do something.
Right, yeah. Right.
And I think as talking about how to cover these folks or how to approach it, obviously, it gets
the hell is
come and knock on our door.
Maybe it's somebody supporting Bush or Hillary. Maybe it's Jim Webb.
Yeah. We understand there's an illegal podcast being recorded here.
Three is company, too. You have a good voice there, man.
What did you get? No.
Was it delivery?
Delivery on the 4th of July.
Yeah, and it was the mailman.
Yeah, they were supposed to take yesterday off. I heard somebody like Howie Carr was talking about. Like,
is it all? Right, quite right. Because they only get one holiday.
Oh,
right?
They do.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So they must have taken it yesterday.
That's amazing. The mailman. I'm stunned by that. He said U.S. Postal Service.
Wow.
You would think they would totally get today off.
Yeah, if you look at your calendar, it said yesterday, Independence Day observed. Mm. So that's the federal holiday.
I see.
That's okay. True.
Today,
that's true.
Not a holiday. It's just Saturday.
Because they, you know, it's a Saturday. Yeah, that's interesting.
So there's, we can pick and choose out of probably what will ultimately be 20 people, and then there's a question of whether to make it or not, make it about personalities or not. So, like the Hillary Clinton one, I think should be like a Clinton expose. But then there's the question of, is all the stuff Bill Clinton did, is Hillary Clinton like right there? Is Clinton a brand that you can attack?
Yeah.
Straight and like uniformly like that. Because God, look at all these deaths. Look at all these Clinton deaths. So,
well, I think one of the things too is with their appearances in the state, there will be so many every week. There'll be probably 4 or 5 appearances from different candidates every week from now on in New Hampshire.
Oh, and, yeah, I have there was this guy at Pork Fest. He was one of Joby's friends. He was staying at the house. And he brings in like a lot of people who are like in finance and venture capital and stuff. So this guy was actually from Hampton Falls, and he was an old man, right? And he went to the roast, and I showed you guys this roast performance I did was actually the best networking thing that I did at Pork Fest.
Awesome.
And he came up to me and he's like, "You're good." He's like, "I want you to know that you can. I will have a way into all of these events." Of candidates in New Hampshire. And Tuesday he texted me and he's like, "Do you want to see Donald Trump tonight?"
Oh man.
And I couldn't do it. But I said, "Keep me posted about ones in the future so I could actually go to."
That's cool.
Because of that crude performance that you guys saw, great. I have now a way
in.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And
I also could go.
That's true.
As a legislator.
Yeah.
But I haven't felt any desire to do so.
We should bring the little Zoom recorder.
That's a great idea.
And just be like,
well, I give you an example. When McCain was running in 2008,
mm-hmm.
I was invited by Rob Rowe, state representative. He lives in our town. Nice guy, and he's become more aligned with – less aligned with the moderates, more aligned with the conservatives up in the state house. And he asked me to come to his house. It was August, you know, 90-something degrees, you know, just 7-something at night, but it was still just oppressively hot inside the house. And McCain was spouting off all sorts of nonsense, and that was at the time he was pushing his so-called campaign finance reform stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a quote that he had said on Meet the Press a year before that, and I had the date. And so he took questions, and I wish I had a camera there because all I can do now is just verbally recite it as closely as
sure.
as I can honestly try to recall it.
Right,
and it was a great confrontation. And then later, we passed by each other, and we were sort of forced to he sticks his hand out, and I was like, "Yeah," and he goes, "Yeah, I really appreciate people like you coming to things like this." I'm like, "Dude, the last thing you want is people like me at things like this."
That's a great line.
Yeah.
That should be the title of your autobiography.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last thing you want is people like me.
Yeah. That's perfect, dude. And it was, I just really slammed into him, and he just looked at me, and I'm like, I mean, it was like it was looking in the face of a criminal. It was a bad, bad deal. But it would have been great to have a camera there. You know, back then it would have been such a great little viral thing. It would have been awesome.
Yeah. It's funny how much of life went by where it's like, was fun.
Yeah. So but these opportunities, it's weird because there's a schism for me where I – even on, 4th of July celebrations, Independence Day and stuff, going down doing the parade last year, I saw your wife, kids. It was great. But I did not want to be doing that friggin' parade. No way. It's like not a chance. But we got the message out to some people. So these events come along and you're like, "Oh my God, I don't want to go to this event. I don't want to have to be in this atmosphere, this room." But if you can turn it on its head and make it sort of amusing, then I can handle one or two of those once in a while where you go and you're like, "Okay, all right, I'm going to find humor in this, okay, somehow,
Right.
Get a lesson out of this rather than, "Oh, man, I can't be in here."
I just feel like I would only make it through, one or two of them before I was on a list. Because I would want to, if I was there, does this guy want to invite me? He saw what I did.
Yeah.
And he saw how I was. We talked. he's like, why was he like, you should be at these things?
Right.
Probably because he's much more interested in the spectacle and the entertainment value of these elections.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And you would definitely add to it if you were to, you know, get some of this information or pose a question.
But then there's a question of, like, who put this guy on the list? And if they track it back to him, is that bad? So I think it's something I need to go over. And if we talk again, it's something I need to go over with him.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, what is his expectation that I'm going to do there? I mean, at a Donald Trump event, I would just feel like I'd scream something out. Like, come on, people, just look at this guy.
Say you've got,
listen
like,
to him.
Tourette's or something like that. And then, you know, you can get away with it.
The Tourette's.
I don't.
That's something I do as a side project. Like while we're covering the election on Podcastmasters, I start like a faux publication, Tourette's Gazette.
There you go. You're
Tourette's Gazette.
Tourette's Gazette. That's it. And I mean, they wouldn't. You know, they wouldn't want to keep you out, right? I had an experience. I was not invited to too many things after the John McCain experience.
This is the seed of a great idea. Yes, I'm from the Tourette's Gazette. Ah, suck on a dick. I used to work with kids with Tourette's. It's never like that.
No.
It was just this one kid. He would write, and then he would stop writing, and he'd stick his hand up in the air, and then he'd go back to writing, and he was totally fine. Like he no like other tics.
Yeah. But there was an experience up in the State House when Gene Shaheen was governor.
Yeah.
And I had press credentials, and I was waiting to just slam her. And I got into the corner office, and there were other reporters there. Kevin Landrigan from The Telegraph was there, and some TV people were there and stuff. And at that time, Alicia Preston, who now does she does political advising for campaigns and stuff, and she's pretty cool. Alicia was there. And so I asked some pretty intense questions of the governor, and she basically just lied to my face. And but it was cool because those guys, she came up to me later. She goes, man, I'm so glad you were here. And I was like, you know, she's more politically conservative type person. And I was asking about health insurance regulations, which she hated. And, you know, I was exposing some of the stuff. And she goes, you don't care. You don't care. I'm like, I don't give a freaking crap if she doesn't like me, whatever, you know. But the thing is, you know, was I going to get let back in there after that? I never tested it. I don't know.
Didn't you have another story where you were like apprenticing with a reporter and they just took like verbatim like what the politician did? Are you going to?
Yeah, that's a perfect example of what happens in Washington. It was funny because I used to watch TV as a teenager.
Yeah.
And I would see a story and there was always a pattern. There was, there's a problem with this farmer losing his farm. And then like the next day or sometimes within, you know, just later on, they would – but usually back then they were a little more subtle. They would wait like a day and then say, this is going to be solved by this congressional bill, which will help this person save his farm, you know,
that sort of stuff.
So I noticed that pattern and I would talk to my teachers, most of them left-wing, you know, public school teachers, and they'd be like, I don't know what you mean. Like, my God, how oblivious can you possibly be? You know, they probably weren't even watching the news. So then I go to Washington and I'm reporting for I'm an intern for Radio Syndicate and I'm shadowing the reporter, this woman. And so we went over to this hearing on crack legislation to stop crack babies from being born.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sponsored by Dick Gephardt. I think Dick Gephardt was one of the main sponsors. So I go into the hearing and, you know, you plug your audio thing in so you're going to be able to keep track of your footage or your seconds or whatever. And when you find that there's a good quote, you know, you say, okay, that's good. But this is an event that's being put on by the people who are sponsors of the bill. It's not the news. It's an event. That is, you know, the news is not what they're creating this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we go in and we get this information, you know, little sound bites. We take their flyers. She goes, okay, yeah, we have their flyers. We're all set. We can go do our report now. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, yeah, well, we're done. We're going to go do the report now. I was like, no, we're not done. What do you mean we're done? I was like, aren't you going to get anybody who's opposed to this bill? And she goes, no, this is the event that happened today. I was like, but this event is created by the people who support the bill. They're the ones who are pushing the bill. This is just a big ad campaign. All you're doing is acting as a conduit and an amplifier for what they want put out. You're exactly. giving them free publicity.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I was like, you know, why don't you do? She goes, well, that's not my job. I was like, well, what is your job?
Well, I wonder how she learned that too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, and who modeled that for her?
I think a lot of it has to do with they don't have first of all, she wasn't questioning whether it was constitutional. She wasn't questioning whether Dick Gephardt also wanted, you know, just as far as whether he's a hypocrite or not, whether he thinks, you know, crack baby legislation is also something they should fund for Planned Parenthood when they're going to be involved with, you know, funding abortions on the federal side.
Sure.
Which some Christian people would say, you know, excuse me, wait a minute. You know, there's a double standard here, sir. At one point, it's a baby that should be saved from being addicted to crack because that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to get the mothers off of crack cocaine so the babies wouldn't be addicted. But on the other hand, if the mother wanted to abort the fetus, then you would fund her to abort the fetus. So is it important to save the baby or not? You know, no tough questions for any of these guys. And as an anarchist, you know, one way or the other, it's not my business. But they didn't ask those questions. And I think a lot of them, it's a lot to do with the time that they had to get the reports in. Like, this is an event today. We got to get back, got to get the report done, and then move to another hearing and do another report.
Yeah, I think a lot of your – a person's resourcefulness comes from, like, feeling comfortable just in life generally, right? So you're more resourceful to do a good job for yourself or your profession or for other people if somebody isn't like, hey – you better do this. This needs to be done this way. But I mean, that's kind of the nature of that business too. It's like everything is deadline driven.
Yeah.
You have a day to do anything.
Yeah, but you know,
unless you're like an investigative reporter.
Yeah. But it is funny though, because there are some reporters like my friend, Eric Shiner. Mm-hmm. He used to work for Channel 50 when they were doing news here in New Hampshire. And he, like I gave him Bastiat stuff early on and economics in one lesson, he would ask the extra question. And he would, even though he didn't have a lot of time, I think part of it is it's a combination of the time and the knowledge base. So you know you have a certain amount of time to ask certain amount of questions. So you could ask a substantive question, but a lot of them don't have the knowledge base. They don't read. You know, I said to this woman, I was like, look, if you were reporting on two banks merging, would you not want to find out, you know, like what their total funds were, how many clients they served, where, you know, would you not want to get some background on the banks?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you just say, oh, bank A and bank B reported today and now I'm going to move on? You
right.
know?
Yeah.
And so for somebody who has some information about the, you know, the so-called rules of the government for going in there, they can ask a simple question. You're like, oh, can you tell me where this is constitutionally sound? The question is whether they'll be let back in.
You know, well, that's the question. That's what I always said about Jan Helfeld.
Yeah.
Like it's, and I said the same thing to Luke Rutkowski when I was on with him. It's really neat to see what people look like how people behave when they only care about interviewing the person once.
Yeah,
you know.
Now Luke's great with that.
Well, I said that was the way I asked the question. I said, so Luke, you know, you have that approach. Have you ever tricked anyone into interviewing you more than once? Henry Kissinger. Guess how many times? Five.
Wow.
Five times Henry Kissinger has gotten in front of a mic with Luke Rutkowski.
Wow.
Now, Henry Kissinger is in his 80s, so maybe he doesn't. But you'd think it'd be pretty memorable when after the things go south in the interview, Luke starts shouting New World Order at you. Like you think. I don't think he does that anymore. He seems much more composed than he used to be.
So what did he do out at the Bilderberg?
He got in. Him and Berwick got in to the event.
That was really amazing.
And we're just like walking around in the hotel. And then, well, I think first they got into the G whatever that was. And then they just had their press credentials from that event. And I guess Bilderberg was like right by there. So they just, you know, pulled up to security and they're like, they let them through.
And they just let press in the...
Yeah, I don't understand how Luke Rutkowski's face isn't everywhere at any event where important people are going to be.
Yeah.
You know? And I think sometimes it is. But, I mean, he does fantastic work for what he does. And there's, I mean, that takes a lot of fucking courage
big
to,
time.
To do so, what he does.
Did they uncover anything interesting?
I haven't seen all his reporting.
Like, oh, this is just old people.
That's probably, yeah. He was really enthusiastic about how he told the story, but I actually want to go and see like what he has for video. I think that's kind of the test.
Yeah, he was definitely racking up his frequent flyer miles, that's for sure. You know, coming over here right after that, that's impressive.
Yeah.
And there was somebody who was at the train station, I think it was an Austrian guy, and he was he got in the faces of a couple of the Bilderberg members, and they wouldn't say anything. And he's like, they said, "Oh, it's an open meeting." And so they're saying, "Well, if it's an open meeting, why don't you want to talk to us about it?" "Well, all the information's online." "Well, then you can talk to us about that information that's online, then, can't you?" "No, I can't." You know, they verbally would not answer any of the questions.
Interesting.
Yeah. Orally. Yeah. So it was interesting.
Well, I wonder if a lot of the silence is like how this is just a question, right? Yeah, yeah. I wonder how much of the silence about Bilderberg is actually a result of people like Alex Jones covering it. Because they're like, look, are there people who go to that meeting? Because meetings like that are happening all over the world all the time. Maybe not on that scale, maybe not with people that important, but like a bunch of people sitting in a room saying, how can we make plans, you know, either with or without the knowledge, either for the benefit or at the expense of others. Like those meetings happen every day, you know, on a variety of scales.
Yeah.
So how much of the secretive nature of Bilderberg is actually about people who are in that circle watching Alex Jones and saying, these people will make a conspiracy out of anything, and maybe we just shouldn't give them a bunch of ammunition, you know? Now, any of these things, like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, it's all like central planning on a global scale. It's bad. There's no argument about that. But the like how nefarious it actually is, I don't know. I would want to be inside or talk to someone who has been inside, and I just haven't had that experience yet.
That's an interesting point. For example, like you look at Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel is an objectivist. I met Peter Thiel at an Adam Smith dinner that was sponsored by the Foundation for Economic Education.
Right.
And really nice guy. You know, real good guy. Gave me his email address. Like, yeah, get in touch with me. You know, I really like what you're doing. You know, I'm like, cool. He was invited to Bilderberg. I think he's been invited a couple times.
Yeah, the steering committee.
Yeah.
They wanted a lot of those tech people like Zuckerberg and all of them involved in that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so people saw that. I mean, that was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago when that happened. Yeah. And they're like, oh, they're just buying, you know, they're co-opting all these people.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. And he's like, well, really? Or do they want to hear from them and get information from them and find out, you know, what their positions are on things? You know,
a lot
of these people, maybe it's just policy stuff and they're not as nefarious as you think. But then again, you look at, like, for example, Alex Jones, the Bohemian Grove stuff. People thought that was just a rumor. Until he broke into the Bohemian Grove and got video of them, you know, in front of that giant owl thing, you know, burning effigies and with crazy weird stuff in the middle of the night. So you say, like, I'm not particularly a follower of conspiracy theories or anything like that, but with something like the Bilderbergs, which for a long time they said, oh, you know, there's nothing going on, and then Jones comes out and says, no, there is something going on. And then they actually say, well, yeah, there is stuff going on. You say, okay, so how far into this is he correct about what they're doing back there? I don't know. It's tricky. I'll give you one story. I think I told you about the Jazz Coleman thing when we met Jazz Coleman from Killing Joke, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I told you about this, Brett, but so my buddy Malcolm and I, we go down to see Killing Joke, and I went in beforehand because I wanted to interview him, and I called the club down in Boston, and so we got to go down before the show, and brought a little video camera and sat down with Jazz Coleman. Now Jazz Coleman, when he was like, you know, a teenager, he formed Killing Joke, and I think on his father's side he's Indian, on his mother's side he is British. or I can't remember, but anyway, very talented guy, does symphonic compositions and things. He's worked with the Prague Philharmonic. He owns an island off the coast of New Zealand now, but he started as a punk rock guy. He squatted in a house on the second floor above the Clash, mm-hmm. which I think is just, you know, perfectly made for like a TV series or a movie. I mean, how cool would that be to talk about that? But anyway, so he sat down with us, and his music, he's sort of from the left-wing, anti-corporatist sort of, you know, so-called anarchist, but, you know, still thinks that it's mostly big people with money that are generally the people to watch out for, and he might not be so free market oriented as we might be, you know, to allow for markets and stuff. He might be a little skeptical about that and think that they need some sort of regulation, which would just cycle back around again. But he's been very opposed to a lot of the governments that have been out there, and you know, from Reagan's time, Thatcher's time into Obama, you know, he has stuff about the drones, and he's been speaking out a lot over the past 10 years about the IMF, Bilderbergs, and stuff like that. And so we sat down with him and we started talking, and he said, you know, when I started doing this, he says, I was, you know, very anti-authority. He says, and I got to look into it more after the first couple albums. I realized that there are certain people who were pulling the strings. And he said, now it's really kind of strange because I'm in a position where I meet these people. He said, I think his bassist or his drummer refinishes paintings for like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and stuff. Mm-hmm. He goes, I rub elbow. I've been in their houses. I talk to these people now. He says, I'm on a level now where I know these people. And he says, they really believe this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of weird because I had always, you know, poo-pooed a lot of this and like, you know, the whole culling of the population by a third, world government, you know, through the banking system, all that stuff. He's like, no, they really believe it. And I was like, that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
And it was, and he was not lying. He was, you know, you could tell he was just like, that was weird for me. And he's like, and it's weird now. And he's, and, but it's weird because he hangs out, he'll be in at parties with these people, but he's like totally opposed to them and doing songs about this stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. He has a song called "The Great Call," which is all about Codex Alimentarius, which is it's essentially an EU code that they proposed back in the 60s. It's called the Food Code, and they almost initiated it last year, but they had opposition, and it would basically only allow farmers to use seeds that were approved by the EU, mm-hmm. and you know, big pushes by Monsanto and stuff, and. He warned about Codex Alimentarius. He was on stage saying, I hope you people have your own plots of land to grow your own food. Watch out for Codex Alimentarius. And then 2 years later, they started pushing Codex Alimentarius.
And what is it exactly?
It's a set of regulations regarding what can be used for seeds anywhere. For anything, home gardens.
So, is it international?
It's through the EU. It's okay. An EU regulation.
So it's just Europe.
But So there you go. So that's, you know, I'm skeptical of this stuff. But when you see, you know, like 10 years ago, if I'd seen Luke's videos, I would have been like, oh, that guy's just a crank. He's just going around trying to get publicity.
Well, he was a kid, you know, and he was overzealous like a lot of us are when we start. And, I mean, it was at a time, you know, that's the interesting thing about this time is like anybody can wake up, so to speak, and be on YouTube within a couple of days.
Yeah.
So the evolution of his work is really interesting. Like when he's yelling at Zbigniew Brzezinski that he's not going to have his new world order. And Zbigniew Brzezinski standing there with this look on his face like, well, have it if I want. You're not going to stop me.
Yeah.
You know? So, I'm just continuously impressed with the work that Luke has done over the last few years. So he's a really cool guy, too. He's interesting to talk to.
And I think there's a place for that sort of thing, you know, the confrontation of these people. And sometimes I wonder if I'm going to be speaking with a politician or whatever. For example, Porkfest, the video of Ian confronting the state license guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I thought about 3/4 of that was just spot on.
It was pretty funny. It was definitely amusing. Yeah.
And a friend of mine saw it and said, oh, man, he fell apart in the end, man, when he started swearing at him and stuff. He lost it there. So that's an interesting take of, you know, what's the, for the viewer, what's the best thing for the, to show the viewer? You know, that you're standing up to these guys? Well, that's probably somebody who's already agreeing with you. Or, and what about those guys? You know, or are you going to go in depth and say, hey, guys, can you sit down for a second and show me where in the, let's say, on the state constitution level, and then get even deeper? Morally, is this acceptable? You know, are you going to get the opportunity to sit down with licensed guys like that? Or are they just going to be like, no, we're not going to talk to you?
Right. Yeah. It's a lot like, this might be the only chance I ever get to do this.
It's exactly what happens. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So changing directions a little bit, we agree that this should be, and I mean, I guess I can source the audience on this too. We would probably be best served to devote the next year to making shows about the election in one form or another.
Yeah. Well, among, if you want to do that as part of other stuff or that on its own, I'm cool with that. It's fine with me.
Yeah.
There'll be no shortage of material to work with.
Right. Sure. Right. And there's lots of different ways that it can be done. It can be taking, you know, I mean, the debates are going to start. So, oh my God, oh, we could do, like, because we're flexible about when we could do it, we could sit here and watch the debate, you know?
Yeah.
Even if we watched it the next day so we could pause it. Mm. Like, we could do...
That would be fun.
Multiple different debates, right? Because there's so many candidates. They're going to be splitting them up into tiers.
Yeah. Oh, are they really going to... Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
They would it would just go all day if they had.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll take like the top five in the polls and let them have a debate, and then the next five let them have a debate.
That's disappointing. That's too bad that they do it that way. But that is the way that it would.
What else do you do?
Fall. Yeah, exactly.
You can't have 15 people up on the stage.
Well, the most they ever tried was like maybe 12 in the Republican 2012.
Yeah.
Or I feel like 2008 was a big field too. Well, 2008 was a huge, because there was both parties had, you know. So I mean, we're in that situation again where there has to be a new president, and there's going to be a lot of people. So we've got plenty of material. I mean, some of the worst people, or even if they're not the worst, the most interesting, you know. Mm-hmm. And I even think like dealing with Rand Paul would be, because I'm also thinking about like clicks and stuff like that and YouTube visibility. So that's the best foot forward for, I would say, the next year. We just have to find, like, having a month in between would mean that we would have to find an interesting way to cover it each month. And shooting for, like, you know, the middle of the month. Like just to kind of, it's really hard because like, oh, this only has to be once a month, but like shooting for somewhere between like, you know, what's today, the 4th. So shooting between like the 16th and the 15th and the 20th.
Yeah.
Every month.
Yeah, that works.
To say, okay, who's ahead? What are the trending stories? And, you know, taking a couple weeks to prepare. The video analysis stuff is great. The expose, who's interesting people for exposés? Clinton, Donald Trump. Donald Trump's been around a long time. Mm-hmm. He's a madman. Who else in the Republican field is even interesting?
Well, you got Chris Christie, who's obnoxious and has
got to have some creepy background.
Right. I kind of have a soft spot for him because of how he went after the NJEA. And how he's like, hey, I'll just say what I want. There's like, even if that's like, he's kind of at this point, like he knows that that's like a strong point for him. So he's kind of becoming a caricature of himself.
It's his shtick now.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, hey, shut up.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Christie.
And this is one of the things that I think Christie's knee jerk reactions sometimes are going to close off. You know, he uses it as a tool to close off any sort of really substantive conversations of things.
Yeah.
And so you know, to expose that, I think, is valuable, especially if you're looking at particular issues rather than just his technique. Because, you know, just looking at his technique, it's like, okay, thumbnail, we got it, we understand. But to actually look at the subjects that have been brought up, that's interesting. So it depends on what subjects are brought up. It would be interesting if we could sponsor our own debate.
That would be
the way to do it.
Somebody said that, I forget who it was. Somebody was like, "Hey, you could organize a candidates event." This was like
exactly.
This was like right when this started. What was it for? I don't remember. This is like
Speaking of which, so I keep getting asked to have candidate events at my house.
Uh-huh.
And my house is all torn up right now. So it's not, like, I couldn't really do it.
What's torn up about it?
It's just all kinds of construction. And
what are you doing?
A lot of things.
Oh.
Yeah, we're basically gutting the entire house and rebuilding it.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So
adding floors and...
Adding floors?
Yeah, like extending parts out. And
it's going to be an M.C. Escher house. The stairs are going to go, you know, upside down. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. You should shoot for that, a house that's physically impossible.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, and the basement is going to be a lounge for men only and a movie theater.
Nice. And good. I'm glad that's happening. All right. Yeah. So they keep asking you to have.
So anyway, that would be a perfect situation where we just gather up our own people and just kind of.
That would be.
Or how about this? You have them come. Right. Yeah. Under and everything looks normal. Mm-hmm. You know, everything checks out. And then you bring them down into the basement to the men's lounge. And I'm just
petting a cat.
Yeah. We've been waiting for you.
Have a seat.
Don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. Yeah. Everything will be fine.
That's right. You just sit in the chair.
No, Berwick should do it. Yeah. It's just Berwick in a white suit with a cat and like two Mexican gangsters behind him.
Turn the lights on.
We hear you're interested in running for the president of the United States. Wow. Like
Ricardo Montalban in the skin.
Exactly.
Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. Now we just have to check this with the authenticator.
And we're just like the audience of this man. Like we're just how, like, there's just always people hanging just around the king
never
or the queen.
Anything.
Right. They're just sitting there
faceless,
quietly.
Shadowy.
Yes. Yeah, we're in the shadows.
You have clipboards.
Right.
You know.
How ambitious of you, seeking such a high office. it would be interesting to be able to. Well, who would be the candidates that you would. I mean, so you're a Republican.
Yeah, well, right now, it's free for all.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, hey, which candidate would you like to have in your home? Mm. Or multiple candidates. Mm. As it narrows down, that's going to start being a little. But I will be ready probably for such things after the first of the year. So if they want to start. But then the primary will be over and we'll be stuck with one candidate. I don't know that I really want freaking Jeb Bush in my.
And they won't. After the primary is over, they don't care about New Hampshire anymore.
New Hampshire's out of it then.
Yeah. So,
So we have to find a willing participant to say, yeah, come on over to my house. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like a little restaurant place or something, you know.
Well, who else is a person who would get asked who has decent accommodations? There's probably quite a few people, right? Who are your peers?
Yeah, I don't know any of them.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Yeah, but there's lots of Free Staters who have your position, right?
I don't think they host events.
Oh, all right.
Hmm. That's too bad. I'd love to be able to do something over at our place in Amherst.
Yeah.
I don't think that would happen, though.
No. I think, but I think that's an interesting thing. If there was like another house that you could use, that would be cool.
I could check with my brother.
Yeah. So, but I will keep my eyes open for friendly environments, though, that would be accepting of our kind. Maybe we can sneak some equipment in there and.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even just to be able to set up. I don't think so now, though. But I was thinking even just to set up like brief question and answer video things, like with no crowd at all, or just like two or three people hanging.
Hey, you don't have to be quiet. We're just doing bonus content, so you're okay.
Hey. Even just to be able to set up, you know, question and answer things. You know, to have somebody come in and, you know, you have like three people there and they're just talking with somebody, you know, without any audience. That would be cool, too.
If you could
find a place. But
difficult. Well, so if I this guy's name was Fred. So if he, you know, is around and he gets back in touch with me, the guy that I met up in Lancaster.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, maybe I can go and feel it out and see. The whole experience could just be very scary for me. Like, these kinds of people, like, who... Well,
they do like to... They pack people in. into very tiny spaces, and they do that on purpose.
Yeah.
So that they make it look like it's very, very crowded.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, so just like, what, how close would I want to be with people who are like, yeah, I'd vote for Donald Trump? You know, like how, like what if it's really, I'm really like a sardine in this room and I decide I want to escape and everyone's just like, Trump, 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 Trump. So, all right. So we have a plan and I'll run it by the audience. I think that's good. And we'll generate a list and that's...
Should we endorse a candidate at the end of this process?
Endorsement of a candidate for office of the state.
Or could we find another way to do the endorsement? Yeah. Like,
amongst the criminals, he's the least of the criminals.
Yeah. So suppose we did something like we created like a Hitler index, right? and assigned it to each category or to each candidate. Like, hey, you're 90% Hitler, and you're only 10%.
I love it.
And then, but then, when we come up with our endorsement, then we can like go to one of their public events and like put out a plaque.
We've endorsed you.
It's like we've endorsed you with you. Your Hitler score is only 15%.
Is it too? is it too complicated if we had like you know a fascist for the Republicans and like a socialist, national socialist for the.
Yeah,
Democrats.
You're 10% Trotsky or something.
Worse. We can do worse than Trotsky.
Yeah, true.
I don't think he killed anybody.
Stalin.
Stalin.
Yeah.
Hitler and Stalin. Those are the two go-tos, right? So we have a Hitler index and a Stalin index.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Well, all right. So, but Hitler is kind of a socialist too, though. So
yeah, true.
Who was like a Mussolini? Let's skip. Well,
they're all statists, so it just depends on what, like, you're trying to find that shading of the statism.
To
fit the left wing and the right wing.
So I think Mussolini and Stalin would be the best choices. Like, it's risky to not do Hitler. Because Hitler's so safe. But, you know.
And also, you got to say that's a good point because Hitler is so associated with the extermination. And Mussolini is not necessarily associated with that, but with the fascism in Italy.
Yeah.
So if you were to bring up this, you know, Hitler, some people from certain groups might, you know, look at this as, oh, that's hands off. You know, that's our purview. And, you know, you can't talk about Hitler because he was involved with the, you know, extermination of
Godwin's law. And then there's that problem. Right. Yeah. And then you're just a Tea Partier for comparing Obama to Hitler and you're an occupier for comparing Bush to Hitler. Yeah. So Hitler, the seed of a great idea was planted. We establish indexes for each group. And we go, that's an awesome idea.
I think that's great. Yeah.
All right. So we have a way to, like, in this way, like, it's an ongoing thing, right?
Yeah.
So
you've gone down on the scale. That was impressive. With your statement last week, sir, we can have, like, charts every week.
Yeah, we do. Doing. We need a graphic designer to develop these charts. That's a great idea. Well done, Osborne.
Very cool.
All right.
So essentially you're talking about biting the bullet and have to be in rooms with these supporters and these candidates. And
I don't know if that'll happen or not.
Yeah, have to. I mean, they generate plenty of content.
No, that's true.
To be viewed on television.
Just imagining getting back to my old fighting days and getting in there.
I think we want the audience to be able to experience the same thing we're experiencing. To be like, it was really scary. They all had blank faces. It smelled like quiche.
Like sweat and statism.
Old people.
Yeah, old people and quiche.
Yeah.
And
adult diapers.
Little quiche hors d'oeuvres. do they serve food at these things?
Coffee. It smell like coffee like crazy. A lot of coffee. A lot of coffee.
Yeah. Are there booze events?
Hardly ever. I turn them into booze events sometimes.
Nice. Good for you. Oh, and a lot of chicken. A lot of chicken. Chicken and stuffing and coffee. Yeah. Big time. That's the way it goes.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right. Cool, man.
So, okay. So that's a preliminary plan. Who's first?
Oh, man. Well,
We'll see who's in the news. Maybe we should pull this Jim Webb guy out since he's kind of unknown and he's recently surfaced in the news.
Yeah, Webb would be a little more deep research. Yeah. Type thing.
The other thing, so we talked about doing exposés on people.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones we talked about are kind of the obvious ones. Wouldn't it be fun to like do a surprise exposé with information that people just don't even like? An exposé on fucking who's the one of those religious guys? Robertson?
Oh, is it? Yeah, you mean like
Huckabee?
Yeah, Mike Schmuck.
Is he running for president?
Yeah, he announced a couple weeks ago.
Oh God,
yeah, Schmuckabee. And he's another one that I think got paid by the Bushies because he's no longer with Fox and he needs money. So.
Right. I think that it might be better to lead like the first episode of like Podcast Masters Election. We call it the Clinton Murder Machine. Like lead heaviest, right? Like you all know what this is, you know. And
we got to talk about this Rubio guy too.
Marco.
He said some stuff on the radio that just is the worst. Yeah. He was talking one day about how it's so important that we provide these tax credits to parents of children because we need them to, I can't remember the word he used, but it was like harvest future taxpayers
Oh,
it's like it's critical to our survival.
Like the crops.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
really gross.
Man, that's nasty. Well, that's similar to the idea of the value that when they were looking at who they should take care of within the government-run healthcare system, and Ezekiel Emanuel said, well, you know, certain people will be more valuable to us than others because of their potential for life experience. So the young and the very old, we should really cut back on government health care to them and concentrate on the people that will bring us the best bang for our buck. In other words, tax money.
Sure.
And that was, yeah. So,
Who said that?
Ezekiel Emanuel, Rahm Emanuel's brother. He was the one who designed much of the ACA thing. Yeah. So, yeah, man, that's funny. Marco Rubio. And it was like Harvest. It was something like that.
Tax farmer. Yeah, something equally offensive. It wasn't that word, but I remember listening to it. Huh?
Yeah. So, and when will the debate start? I mean, I felt like they started the year before the election. Like, I felt like the first time I saw a debate for Ron Paul was in 2007. So,
I don't know.
They'll be starting up probably September.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Once people come back from their vacations and everything, they're watching TV again.
No, Mitt Romney.
I think on the debate thing, I think Newt Gingrich had the best approach where he was challenging people to one-on-one debates.
Yeah.
And no one took him up on it. But that clearly would be the proper format for figuring out what people are all about. Not this everybody stand up on the stage and give a 30-second answer.
Yeah, because they're not really. Yeah,
like we could do that. Over email.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. That'd be great.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.